second part of a two-part interview with Gilad Atzmon, which took place in London on the 30th of November.
Can we talk about the article that's posted on Indie Media? Where,
yeah.
I've got here the bit that Tony Greenstein wrote about it in his last diatribe. He said, Atzmon's article speaks of a world Judaic view and explains that the Jewish state and the Sons of Israel are at least as unpopular in the Middle East as their grandparents were in Europe just six decades ago.
Yeah.
This is apparently the real meaning of the Nazi Holocaust. It wasn't fascism or crazy ideas of racial supremacy that led to Auschwitz. It was the Jews, and presumably the Gypsies, Slavs, and gays were unpopular. By the same logic, the Palestinian situation could also be blamed on their unpopularity. Is that what you meant?
I don't even know where to start. You know, this Tony Greenstein is not the first time that I come across it. I've managed to come with the most bizarre interpretations of so many other scholars, and he's not alone. You know, in one of my papers, I proved that his mentor, Lenny Brenner, has managed to completely misunderstand Joachim Prince's interview and the statements. So I don't even know where to start. I think that we better want to ask Tony Greenstein. When it comes to me, the meaning of the Holocaust is very clear. We should never let it happen again. And when I say it, I don't mean a Jewish Holocaust, any Holocaust. I am horrified by the Holocaust of the Iraqi people. Nobody, it's not 44 now, it's 2007. We see it in the news. We are talking about now more than million, some organizations are talking about 1.5 million Iraqi civilians victims.
And that's not even taking into account the number of people who were killed by sanctions before we
for
started
sure.
the outbreak
for sure.
killing.
And nobody gives a toss. Sorry for using this language. This is the meaning of the Holocaust. Now, I think that the fact that Jews were unpopular in Europe is undoubtable. And by the way, it's not that the German didn't like them. In fact, the German Jews were the luckiest. It is Polish Jews delivered by Poles and French. And then 3 years later, the Israeli state is declared. And they have an opportunity to learn the lesson. There was a lesson. There were some things that made Jews very, very unpopular. There was a chance to learn a lesson and to love, and the lesson is to love your neighbor as well as being loved by your neighbor. And I think that it is very established now that this didn't happen. I think that the Israeli arrogance is by far worse than the pre-war condition. And I really want to understand what is going on, because this is the meaning of total blindness. Now, Zionists are not concerned with what I'm saying there. Who is concerned? Tony Greenstein. Tony Greenstein, a person that is conditioned, you know, is not very different neither from the Israelis or from the pre-1930s Jews. Tony Greenstein came last year with this bizarre idea that to the PSC AGM, that the PSC AGM should cleanse some people and denounce other people. And the PSC AGM stood against him as one voice. people from Brighton, from his own PSC branch, are contacting me all the time. They want me to come to give a speech, to give a talk, to give a concert, to help. So he is probably so outraged because he himself feel, and you know, I'm allowing myself to talk as a psychoanalyst here because I'm trained as a psychoanalyst, but if Tony have a chance now to listen to us, Tony, I'm not going to take you as a client, so don't even try to approach me. I think that the condition that led or towards the awful Nazi genocide is not very different from the condition that Greenstein or Machover or Rans or Elf, this Foro and Lenny Brenner, bring or inflict upon themselves. Why? What do they do wrong? I don't know. Maybe the fact that they think that they know what is right and what is wrong, which is very unusual. Do you know many people? You are a Palestinian solidarity activist. You went to Palestine. Do you know many people who know what is right and what is wrong for Palestine, for the Israeli to resolve the conflict?
No.
I'm dealing with this issue now for 10 years. It's not a lot. And we're all very, very confused. Yesterday I read the declaration of the one state. Yeah, great. You know, I obviously agree with everything. But we have 12 signatures. You know, at the time I was offered to join, I said, no, I don't want. You know, so there is reality on the ground and we don't know where it goes. We don't know what is right and what is wrong. We don't know if anti-Semitism is a priority for the Palestinian solidarity discourse. We don't know. I myself think that it isn't. I myself think that it isn't. But I'm happy to consider or to take into consideration many different narratives, many different views. I'm not ready to say one Palestine secular in a socialist world. I'm not gonna come with
binational.
You know, I don't know. I take into consideration the victory of the Hamas, and these people were so determined and insist in outrageously to know that they have the solution, considering the fact that they are so marginal, they just make themselves so hated. So I think that Greenstein is reading what I'm writing, and he is reflecting about his own miserable conditions, and I feel sorry for him because, you know, I'm, as you noticed, you know, I never asked them, this group of five people, to shut up. I've never demanded anyone to cleanse them from anything. I just say, you know, my initial criticism of them said, why do you think that you know better? Why do you think that you can tell the Palestinian ambassador what to do? Where is it coming from? This is exactly Tony Greenstein at the time, you know, behaved exactly like Lord Levi and this Mr. Abrams, who said, I have enough money to buy British politics, so why shouldn't I? It's a free country, isn't it? I give them the right money and, you know, through proxy. And my protocols of the elders of London is exactly the same story. You say, we will tell the Palestinian solidarity what to do. We will tell the Palestinian ambassador what to do. No. No. I don't want it. I don't want it. And this is why they are hated. This is exactly the same reason that Jews were hated. Now, where is the problem? We have Lord Levi. We have Lord Goldsmith. We have an almost Lord Abrams. He paid the money. I think he should become a Lord, you know. The fact that they don't want it is irrelevant. The question is different. Should Jews be implicated by the astonishingly ugly acts of some of their ethnic campaigners? And obviously I say no. And this is very important. I think I'm not going to be judgmental over any Palestinian solidarity activist who happened to be Jewish by origin because of a group of astonishingly ugly jazzers, you know, i.e. Greenstein, Elf, Rosen, Machover, whoever. No, I prefer to see Rosen and Greenstein and Machover as a bunch of diluted creatures, and to stop there, because I will never employ any racial category. I prefer to walk ideologically.
Right, so you don't see Jews as a race?
Definitely, Jews are not a race. Jews are not a race. Some, they are racially orientated, you know. Jews are definitely not a race.
Right.
They are racially.
So explain what racially orientated means.
It's very simple, you know. They are not a race because they're made of quite few races. In fact, Sephardi Jews or Arab Jews are far closer to Palestinians, to Ashkenazi Jews, who are largely Khazarians. It's a multi-racial identity. Why they are racially orientated? They are racially orientated because if you want to marry a Jew, so you think as a racist, but you don't have the genetic background or the genetic knowledge to identify. So you behave as a racist without forming a race. We just had a very interesting case here in London, in the JSF or FSA, the Jewish Free School. It's a very big, very good school, and one young Jew wanted to join as a student, and they told him, we cannot take you. Your mother is not really Jewish, you know. So this is without having a real kind of a scientific proof of any racial identity. You know, there is racial orientation, there are racial concerns are involved, and I was very happy to read that the Commissioner of Racial Equality, you know, was picking on these stories. And what is going on with this kind of Jewish school? And this is a big issue. But a person who runs a blog named Jews Sans Frontières cannot be a universalist. When they were begging me, this bunch of jokers were begging me to join Just Peace UK, and then some other kind of sectarian, idiotic groups. I told them, you see, I don't know what to do because, you know, I have some goyim blood in my body. You know, I don't want to give too many details. You know, but I told them I'm kind of something between quarter to half Gentile. Right. What is the rules? And obviously, you know, I try to ridicule it, you know, and you know, but what is it?
Yeah. I think
the point is clear.
I thought about it. My point was, I can't imagine calling myself a non-Jew against Zionism, and nor can I imagine calling myself an other against Zionism.
Yeah.
So I can't.
I've seen it. You know, I said many times I've been in Germany, and I've never seen a Palestinian solidarity activist that presented himself as Aryan for Palestine or Caucasian for South Africa. No. And I'm not very, very clever here. Basically, this group of people are the last Bundist in Europe or in the West. And the criticism made by Lenin in 1903, he said, National identity is geographically orientated, so don't bullshit me. And this is actually gave me a good reason to write my last paper. Yeah, Zionism solved it on the expense of the Palestinian people. Doing the most horrible things, atrocities, occupation, oppression,
and attacking anyone who criticizes.
For sure, they do the most horrible. Horrible things, but you know, I was sitting with Ilan Pape like 2 weeks ago, and he said, "Listen, is people who were born in Israel, you know, like second generation, one generation, half a generation, immigrated to Israel, they are now there, they're citizens. What do you want to do with them? There's nothing that we can do." So Zionism, again, managed to change in a way the Jewish faith. Whether ethically, completely wrong. Whether it's going to last, I don't know. But they've done something that definitely made them far more successful than the Bund. Now, another thing, you know, the Bund were associated with the Mensheviks within the conflict between Bolsheviks and Mensheviks. They were with the Mensheviks, I think you're saying it, yeah? With the Mensheviks, which was a very bizarre concept, you know. Again, they knew exactly how to do, you know, to get the revolution, but obviously were not involved in the revolution. And when the revolution happened in 1917, the Bund was out because it was the Bolsheviks. They were out. They were out because, as it happened, it was the fact, you know, on the ground, you know, a group of a few Bolsheviks, belligerent, managed to take a town and managed to start the whole thing.
Going back to what Tony Greenstein read your article as, apparently at least two people in indie media got the same reading from it.
Yeah. It is very interesting, I must say. I tell you why. Because what Tony Greenstein is saying there is that I am justifying the Holocaust. Now, I don't remember my exact words, but as far as I remember, and I don't know if you have the original text here, is actually preventive. If the Israelis, and I don't remember the exact word, but I definitely remember that it was there.
I think it was if they understood the condition of the Holocaust.
Yeah, and they want to prevent it from happening again, they have to look into themselves. And this is the most banal, trivial concept. How you come out with an interpretation of that suggests that I justify the Holocaust, I can't really understand. Now, I think that my duty as an academic, as a scholar, and maybe as an intellectual, you know, I assume that Greenstein doubted it, is actually, and he comes with this, with, you know, the last sentence that he comes, yeah, gay should ask themselves. Not only that they should, they do. They have gay studies. And they try to understand, and we should try to understand xenophobia. We should, we must. How can we prevent racial hatred? How we can prevent Greenstein, Islamophobia, you know, how can we help him, you know, to deal with his own Islamophobia, a man that treat Palestinian for, you know, blame Palestinian for being morons for voting for the Hamas, a man that doesn't respect the people that he's supposedly or allegedly fighting for, how can we help his intolerance? So, yeah, my duty is to understand why people hate gypsies and why they hate the Jews and why Greenstein hates Arabs so much. And I think that if we learn what were the conditions, we'll definitely be able to bring to help resolve the situation. You know, because we have to face it. Once we learn, you know, it doesn't mean yet that we can turn it into knowledge, turn it into a curriculum. I don't know, but we can confront the Israelis. You know, for sure, I think that I don't blame the Jews. And as I said before about Abrams, you know, the fact that Abrams is a criminal and trying to buy a political party, I cannot argue that Jews should be implicated by it. But it is very concerning. Well, it should be Jews. Jews must be concerned.
And it does. I mean, looking at the Jewish Chronicle today, and there's
very interesting. I didn't see it.
But lots of people there saying, well, you know, even to focus on that their religion is anti-Semitic.
Yeah.
And I think it's very difficult because it isn't just religion. These guys are Zionists.
Yeah.
They, you know,
and this is, I think, the biggest revelation of my last paper. It took me 10 years. But I understand now that it's not that these Jews are Zionists. Very cleverly, Zionist made itself into the current symbolic identifier of the Jew. I said something that I thought, oh, stupid, why didn't I write about the article? When I came to this country, for a few years, I was playing in Jewish weddings, and I learned a lot, bar mitzvahs, everything. Every Jewish wedding, simcha, festive, every Jewish wedding, you know, every event was ended with British anthem and a tikva, the Israeli anthem. What is it? What does it mean? Secular, religious, everyone. What does it mean? It means that they are identifying culturally with this state. To tell you that I know that everyone was there, maybe there were three people that were outraged. So what? You know, for sure they were.
But
you know,
but there would be a lot of Jews.
But this is what it is.
Don't.
You know, some are Zionists, and some just jump when they hear Avanagila, and some just say use the Hebrew word. You know, a few Hebrew words. Now, how did I understand it? Again, because I look into myself. My Arabic is nothing to be proud of. You know, it's horrible. It's even far worse than my English, and my English is not great. But when I see a Palestinian or an Iraqi, or you know, I want to cheer him up and to say, hey, listen, man, I'm with you. I say, Salam Aleikum, Shukran. You know, I use the, and I realized the Jews are doing exactly the same. They say Shalom Aleichem. You know, they have the few words. They don't speak Hebrew. You know. I realized that Michael Rosen doesn't speak Yiddish. He knows Tuches, Shmuches, Buches, Guches, you know. And this is this is his cultural identifier. So if the Yiddish is cultural identifier for him as a Jew, so Hebrew is good enough to be a cultural identifier for the vast majority of Jews. Mm. And that's what it is. So Zionism is the current symbolic identifier. Zionism and the... culture that is associated with it, like Israeli bright folklore, blah 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 blah. This is what it is, and there is a big question where to locate Abrams or Lord Levi in all that. With Lord Levi, it's very simple. You know, he's doing business in Israel. His son is doing business with Barak. You know, about Lord. Not Lord, about Abrams, I don't know enough, which is very interesting. But I noticed that when Lord Levi got into problem, his PR campaign was very simple. He brought a rabbi, and the rabbi said, oh, he's such a nice guy, and we love him. And you know, and today I heard, you know, I just read the Daily Telegraph, and again there was the rabbi. Yeah, we had a problem with Abrams. He's like, kid couldn't get the cemetery. He wanted to make a memorial, but we finished it. You know, so always, we are talking about ethnicity, but always where there's things get very complicated, the rabbi is brought in. And I tell you something interesting. 22 years ago, when Tony Greenstein was about to be thrown to jail, for his whether it was the shoplifting or the credit card fraud or something that shouldn't be proud of, his solicitor, his lawyer, brought the rabbi, because Tony Greenstein is the son of a rabbi, which is beautiful. I wish my father would be a rabbi rather than a rocket missile designer, you know. At least I would know something about Judaism, you know. You know, so when you were the problem, rather than being an anarchist Marxist Menshevik, he became a son of a rabbi. And this is something that I cannot accept. This is a severe lack of dignity. And only people who suffer such a severe lack of dignity can engage in such misleading campaign that is there to serve their political interests. Now, there is something that I should say. I'm not a politician, you know. I'm a musician. And somehow I'm an artist, and it's very rare that people try to silence artists. I don't know if you ever thought about it. I'm an artist, I'm a writer. I'm not a politician, I'm not running a campaign, I'm acting as an independent person, and it is really unusual. You know, people invest energy blocking politicians, campaigners, but I'm not. So, looking into it, they try to silence artists, and this is pretty Stalinistic. It's very unusual. And this is why so many people, wherever they go, they always failed. They never succeeded. They succeeded with other people. They succeeded with Shamir, who is a campaigner, and they succeeded with Paul Eisen. They just said, listen, you know, I don't want to be a part of any part. He just left, which is a shame, because I think that he's the best campaigner by far we had in this country. But they always crushed with me, because I'm pure intellectual, you know. And it didn't take me by surprise that Oxford Student Union stood up for Irving, and they did the right thing, you know, because if we don't have freedom of speech, we can close the shop. We can close the shop. So really, Britain has nothing to offer, nothing. Right. And this is a big war, you know. I moved to this country. I love to live here. But if this country is becoming a totalitarian one, it's not cheap enough, you know. You know, we can move to a better place.
Indeed,
you know.
Yeah. Can we just take a few minutes to talk about the Palestine Solidarity Movement? I mean, things feel very stuck, but on one level, I think there is more of a visible Palestine Solidarity Movement in this country than there is an anti-war movement, which...
Yeah.
Which I found pretty outrageous, really. But, I mean, that's how it is there does seem to be an active and visible Palestine solidarity movement, and there seems to be nothing on the anti-war front, even as we gear up to vaporize babies in Iran, which is where it looks to me.
I agree with you. As you probably realize, I'm not involved with the PSC. I don't even think that I'm a member. I don't see any reason to be a member. I do a lot for PSC branches. I find quite a few other organizations in this country that are far more advanced. I sadly regard the PSC as something that is, you know, they're so afraid of the anti-Semitic... I spoke about it with a few scholars a week ago. They're so afraid of being hunted by the Zionist gatekeepers, so they would avoid any real criticism of Israel. They do whatever they can within this very rigid constraints, you can say. Yeah? It's better than nothing.
What can people do? I mean, that's what a lot of us struggle with. You know, I mean, we see boycotting and ours, or building and boycott movements, as being at least something you can engage with and get the message across. I have to say, you know, that my initial reaction to the academic boycott was that this was called by the Palestinians, and, you know, that therefore it was a call that had to be taken very seriously. I think, in a way, being forced into the position of, you know, having a demand for your stuff to be deleted from the web and for you to be denounced as this racist, Nazi, Holocaust denying anti-Semite, it does make me think. Well, there's
obviously, I'm not against the boycott, you know, but what I realize. Okay, I'll tell you something funny, and maybe this says it all. There were weeks that I was doing more than one fundraiser for Palestine. And then I met really wonderful people, and I did a fundraiser of really Palestinians. Everybody was Palestinians. And they found it hard to get really support from the PSC, because all those organizations now have kind of their own dynamic survival mechanism, and rather than think about Palestine or the impact of a big fundraiser with some serious artists, they moved into a state where they try to maintain their power within, and this is why the Palestinian Solidarity Campaign didn't increase its membership probably in the last 20 years. And rather than being critical of them, you know, I just tell them, you know, just open up, start to think ethically rather than politically, rather than seeing yourself. You know, we met in this in Camden PSC. What a bunch of wonderful people. So we were 80 people there. And I came home. I went to another concert and I thought, there are 200 bar mitzvahs in London and they all end up with a tikva, with the Israeli anthem. So we had a one small rally for Palestine, but there were another 200 or 300 Zionist mega rally for Israel, where you celebrate ethnicity and brotherhood and tribalhood and victimhood. And this is not the way. This is not the way. The way is to open the discourse and to be allowed to say what we feel. And this is what I'm... And this is why I'd never be a member of any organization, because I don't want anyone on this planet to tell me what to do. And this is why yesterday I had 100 people here, and today I have 100 people, and tomorrow I have 100... And now we are going to another concert. So just within this next, 4 days, I'm meeting something that is half the size of the Palestinian solidarity in this country. And I'm saying what I want to say. I don't say a lot. I don't have to say a lot. But I'm punching, the right topics. And there was a lot of... There were many attempts to destroy me. You know, a year ago, the Jewish board of Jewish deputy tried to stop me from playing in this venue. In actually the other venue, but Pizza Express. Yesterday I gave a Reuters International kind of... They did kind of a short, talking about politics. And I think that this is what it is. Rather than getting kind of obsessed with our small blogs, to speak to the world. Speak to the world. And as bizarre as it may be, I'm the only person in this country that is doing it. We have some great people like Pape and Radha Karmi. We have great speakers, far better than me, I assume. But they are kind of locked within this academic Oren Ben-Dor. But they're locked within this academic discourse. I'm the only one, I'm the only person who sees something between 2,000 to 10,000 people a month with this important message. And what do we see? Tony Greenstein trying to stop it. And he won't. He won't. He won't stop me. You will really have to come here and to break myself. And I'll buy a new one. And I have already a new one, so it's okay.